Okay, David C. Holland.
Yes, me.
Born where?
I was born in PG County, July 24th, 1988.
1988. So that makes you how old?
28. 29 almost.
Almost 29. So you got siblings?
Yes, I do. Well, I was adopted at birth, so I didn't know about my other half of my family until about 4 years ago.
Interesting.
And we'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But my adoptive siblings, I have two younger sisters, one which is also adopted, and one is actually the birth came from my parents, my adopted parents.
That's wonderful ministry, people who are willing to adopt children.
Yes, it is.
That's just great, great service. And you should, people who are adopted have a lot of abandonment issues.
A lot. And trust issues,
somebody,
too.
Yeah, and yes. But the fact that somebody loved me enough to take me, not even really knowing me, but were willing to take a chance on me.
Exactly.
Is also very, very cool.
Exactly.
So say a little bit about your adoptive family then.
My mother, her name is Patricia Holland. She's from Camden, New Jersey. My dad, his name is Curtis Holland. He's from Brooklyn, New York. They met at work. They were both doing meteorology. So the meteorologist building was in Camp. It was in Camp Springs. They actually closed it down.
I know the building.
About 2 years ago. So my dad, he's retired. My mother, she stopped doing the meteorology maybe 15 years ago to take care of us. And she went to doing hair full time. So she has a salon now in our house.
Nice.
And she's doing hair. They actually just recently got divorced maybe 2 years ago after 25 years of being married.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad lives up here a little bit past Canton, and my mom, she lives in Calvert County still. It was a rough time for them. I saw it happening, but I didn't see it happening. They knew how to hide stuff very well when it comes to their personal relationship. But then me being me during this time, I wasn't around the house and all that and really caring, should I say, about what was going on.
So what their struggles didn't really impact you as you were growing up through that? You didn't really see much of it?
No. Yeah. We seemed like the perfect family. Vacations all the time. And I mean all the time. We would take month vacations and just travel.
Nice.
And things seemed good, you know.
And you felt loved.
I felt loved. Very, very much loved.
Nice.
Yep.
And you said you got one or two siblings?
Two sisters, yep.
And who's the oldest?
I'm the oldest.
And then the two sisters are younger.
Yep.
And one also adopted and the other from your mom and dad.
Yes, sir.
The youngest one from your mom and dad.
The middle child is.
Okay,
yep.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you grew up in?
Calvert County.
Calvert County.
Yep, Southern Maryland.
You're a big boy. Did you play ball?
I did and I didn't. I played for a little bit, but then I got into ROTC, and so that kind of canceled out the sports because yes. I'd rather do that than because I planned on doing the military.
What grade did you start ROTC?
Ninth.
Ninth grade.
Yep.
So what was the high school?
Northern High in Owings, Maryland.
Okay. And you did ROTC all the way through your senior year?
I did it through my senior year, yep, right. 4 years.
Okay, congratulations
sure
on that.
Thank you.
What were the benefits in your life to ROTC?
It taught me a lot of humility, taught me how to make my bed. I did the drill team all 4 years. So at the time, I learned how to spin rifles and do all that type of stuff. It taught me uniformity because, mm-hmm. you know, that's during the drill practices and drill competitions, you know, that's what they're judging on.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun.
So
I'll say that much.
Being part of a team.
Being part of a team, definitely.
Working as a – as not
as
to,
one.
Not, yeah, working as one, not
mm-hmm.
to be identified special,
yep.
but to be as one, working
yep.
as one.
Yep.
Nice. That's very good.
Mm-hmm.
In your senior year – ROTC school ended, ROTC ended.
Mm-hmm.
Was the plan to go right into the military?
It was up until like the middle of my senior year. I caught a drug charge. And so at the time, they weren't taking anybody who had caught a drug charge.
Right.
So that canceled all that out.
Gotcha. They did let you finish your ROTC?
Yeah, I finished ROTC. Okay. I finished high school, got my diploma and everything.
But couldn't join the military.
I couldn't do the military, right. So I had to switch up what I wanted to do.
And when, at what point did you start, what was your age of first use of any chemical?
My first use was smoking weed, and that was at 16. So I was smoking almost the whole through, all the way through high school.
And so while you were in ROTC, you were smoking.
Yeah.
Smoking weed.
Yep.
Were other ROTC guys doing that, or were you the exception as you look back?
I probably was one of the only ones. I really didn't hang out with them outside of the schooling and ROTC, whatever right. we had going on. Besides that, I didn't hang out with them.
Okay. So so you probably were a little different than the rest of them. It wasn't like you all going out after mm-hmm. school and lighting up together.
Right, no. Different deal.
Did you grow up with chemicals in the house and the family? So that was contrary
Definitely
not only
didn't.
To your ROTC world, but your upbringing at home.
Right.
What got you started? Do you remember that first time?
I do remember the first time. Across the street from my house is a barbershop, and so that was the hangout spot for me when I would get home. I knew a lot of people. I knew everybody that worked there, so I would go over there. Of course, people would smoke weed, and it was actually drugs being sold out of that barbershop.
Your parents had no idea?
They found out. Okay. My neighbor actually told my parents that I shouldn't be hanging out over there because of the situation. But me being me at the time, I was like, well, I think it's fine. I'm not the one selling drugs. You know, I'm not the one smoking weed, which was a lie. But at the time, I didn't, you know, my parents didn't know that at the time. Right. So, you know, I was just living my life. I would go over there, hang out all day, all night. Wouldn't get home till like 12 o'clock because we would just hang out. I was drinking. I was drinking with them, and I was 16 years old.
Right.
But my first time smoking weed was a buddy of mine from high school was over there getting his hair cut. My mother was out working. My dad was working. And they were like, man, we need some place to smoke. I was like, man, you know I live right across the street. They were like, all right, well, do you have a blunt, something to roll up? I was like, no, I don't. This is my first time. I've never smoked it before. Well, you got aluminum foil? Sure do. Let's go. So we actually made a little pipe out of aluminum foil and smoked some weed.
In the house or in the yard?
No, we were in the backyard.
Okay,
we have 2 acres. Yeah, we got 2 acres in the backyard, so we can, you know, it's free country out there.
So your parents really didn't know much until you caught that drug charge?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And what was charge? Can I
ask? It was just possession.
Yeah.
Simple possession of marijuana.
Marijuana. Yeah. Yep. So would you say, looking back, that one charge, that one decision, and it was against the law, did that greatly impact your life?
It did, because it kind of took away the trust my parents had in me. Like, they were getting ready to do some things for me. They were ready to buy me a car, pay for my college. I wouldn't have to work. They were going to put gas in my car, insurance, everything. They were going to take care of that. But that kind of deaded that because they found out and saw that I was headed in the wrong direction, and they didn't want that to be they didn't want to be my enablers at the time.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And career-wise, would you have gone directly into the military, or would you have gone to college to try to do like OCS?
No, I would have went straight. I would have went straight into to the military.
Right.
You know, because if you do 4 years of ROTC, that sends you straight to officers program.
Okay.
So I would have been straight in there, you know, and I had the recommendations that I needed. I was good.
So this really did alter your life.
It definitely did.
And you know, good or bad, it was part of the deal. And God has a way of taking even the bad stuff.
I would have been over there fighting the Taliban back in the day, and so who knows what would happen?
Yeah, that's right. So when you graduated from high school, all this stuff changed. And so without the funding, you weren't going to be able to get into college. You weren't going to be able to join the military and benefit from the ROTC at that point. So you just continue to live at home, or did you move out?
I did wind up going to college. I went to Anne Arundel Community College, I went for food production and management, and also hospitality and business management.
Okay.
And since that's the only program they have in the state of Maryland, it's called HCAT. They give you in county tuition or whatever. So it was very cheap. Like, my parents were paying maybe $700 a semester for me, and I was going full time.
So they did cover it for you.
They did wind up covering it.
Cheap enough, they were willing to do that.
That was
nice, good for them.
Right.
And did you have to go to work though to cover your other expenses?
No, I didn't. They were still handling that.
Good. Well, that's nice.
But I decided to go to work.
Okay.
In
food service?
In food service. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been working in food service since I could start working. First job, of course, was McDonald's, and I moved on up.
Yeah.
I did a year and a half there, and then I dropped out because I started to sell weed.
A year and a half of a two-year program?
Yes.
David, you always just came a little short.
All the time.
Just a little short of stuff.
All the time.
So you started selling weed because you were making a whole lot more than you could be at McDonald's.
A whole lot of money. And missing a lot of money if I stayed at school.
Yep. So I had to do that. Did your parents catch on to that?
They did once. My dad walked in on me bagging up weed in my bedroom. I didn't think he was home, and he got home a little early from work, and I was in there bagging up, and he walked in on me, and I saw the discouragement in his face.
Yeah.
I didn't get in trouble though. He didn't, he didn't say nothing. He just looked at me, shook his head, and walked out the room. I guess it was the type of thing where he wanted me to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
You know.
So you. You're how old now? That event happened at what age?
That happened at 18. I just turned 18. I turned 18 on a Thursday. This happened on a Friday. And I was about to go to, I was having a party that week, that night, that Friday. So I was getting stuff ready for that party. That way I wouldn't have to, do it while it was quick hand-to-hand transactions. That's what I was getting ready for. At my own birthday party.
At your own birthday party, at your house.
At my house.
And you're 18, so you're just out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
So that continued. You continued to sell weed until?
The last time I sold some weed was actually a year and a half ago.
Okay, so that was your MO because you're, would you say 26 now?
28.
28.
Yep.
So that's how you rolled.
That's how I rolled.
You still do some food service?
I've always done food service.
Okay, so continued to get jobs.
Yeah.
What's the longest job you kept?
The longest job I kept was a year and a half, 2 years.
Okay. Did you keep changing jobs because of your chemical addiction relationships, your relationship to chemicals, or you kept getting better jobs, or you kept getting fired? What was the deal?
It started out, I was getting better jobs, and then it turned into me stealing because I would blow my money, so I wouldn't be able to pay this, pay that, so I would have to find some money elsewhere, and so I would see a money bag, and boom, it's mine.
Well, you were making good money selling weed.
But I was smoking a lot more.
Smoking more than that's not good operations if you're smoking up more than you did.
In part, doing a lot of partying, club scene and everything.
Okay, so you couldn't realize what was going on.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I was in the church. I've always been in the church, went to church, played the
church
drums.
Church family.
Very much. Very
and
much
play,
so.
Play the drums. Yep. And, of course, that's part of your story here, and we'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. So, but did the church kids, church people know you were smoking weed a lot? I mean, that was,
they did.
That was part of your deal.
A few people did.
Not many,
but some.
With
some of them, you know, on the weekends we would have, like, practice on a Saturday. I would go there. My parents would be there doing stuff. I would slide out with them, go to their my friends or, you know, some of the people at the church's house. We would smoke, come back to the church, have practice or whatever. I was driving at the time, so I had my own car, so I was able to leave and do as I pleased.
Yeah.
This was probably at the age of 19.
Did you feel like, I'm not being honest, did you feel guilt about sneaking around and acting like one person and mm-hmm. in fact being somebody else?
I did. And
with that background, I would assume, including military training, you would have to feel good bit of guilt.
It was a lot of weight on my shoulders, because it was like I was walking around with like three different personalities.
Yeah.
One would be the Christian good guy, and then one would be the, well, I'm selling drugs, bad guy, and so it was something, I'll say that much. It put a lot of stress on me.
Yeah,
I mean, it could be one reason why I smoked so much, because when I would smoke, I wouldn't think about it. I would just do.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what we do. We that's how we deal with our pain.
And that's what
I was
doing.
Feeling the mental pain. And so you would do that to self-medicate to feel better. Of course, that doesn't really deal with anything.
It
just puts it off for a little while. Mm-hmm. So you live this lifestyle, this whole picture. Mm-hmm. You are working in food service. You are doing church and involved in the band. And really, you know, we consider that ministry.
Right.
Smoking and selling, and all this is just carrying on mm-hmm. up until when?
I would say this happened all the way up until I was about 22. So that was about, 4 years. And that's when I stopped going to church, because actually it was 21, because I was old enough in my mind to make those decisions, whether I wanted to get up and go to church or not. My parents didn't pressure me to do that. So after the age of 21, I stopped going to church. I would just sleep all on Sundays, or I was working. That's another thing. I always had a job.
Did the band, did they really miss you? And
no, they had a few drummers.
So they had other drummers, you didn't feel particularly needed.
No.
You'd rather do something else.
Yeah.
So you'd stay up late on Saturday night doing whatever.
All night long.
And partying pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then either sleep in or drag yourself out to work Sunday morning.
Yep.
All right. So that you continued in that role, no longer active in church. Mm-hmm. Did you feel some guilt about that? Or was it relief because I don't have to get up? I don't have the pressure of pretending I'm something I'm not in church? What was that feeling like?
It was like another weight on my shoulder, because that's when things started to go downhill for me. Once I deleted God out of my life and I pushed him to the side, that's when I started to do some really, really sad things. Yeah. Running women, started using cocaine, started selling cocaine, still out there stealing from my jobs, getting fired. I mean, thankfully, none of the jobs that I've gotten fired from called the cops on me or anything. I've never gotten in legal trouble with my jobs.
Would you say that you were a good worker?
I was a great worker, and that's the reason why.
Yeah. Knowing you here, that I'm not surprised, and I also would understand why they never prosecuted you.
Never, ever.
Hoping probably.
The best for me.
Yeah,
and that's what they would tell me. They were like, you know, I'm not going to do this. I just hope the best for you and hope you change your ways.
Yeah. So. And on the one hand, that was relief. On the other hand, that was more pressure.
Right. So I had to go back out there, job searching.
So we continued in this vein until?
Mm-hmm. Until my parents were like, all right, this is enough. We're going to send you away. And I went to a Job Corps in West Virginia. And my cousin, he works for them, so he was able to get me in. I didn't have to do no paperwork or nothing. I just had to show up, and then I went. Excuse me. And that was a 8-month, no, it was a year program. Mm-hmm. They do a job training, they get you a job and all this and that. And I only lasted a month and a half because you had to be clean. You had to, they drug tested you when you got there, and your urine had to be cleaned by 30 days. Well, I found somebody who knew where some weed was, and I had a lot of money, and no one else really did, but a lot of people wanted to smoke. I was like, all right, well, go get this for me, and I'll sell. I'll be the one who supplies. So he did, and I wound up getting beat for $150, but I still, you know, I pushed that to the side. I wasn't worried about it, and I was still up there smoking, selling weed, a star on the basketball team for those 30 days, and then they gave me another urine sample, and then they're like, okay, this is not good. You gots to go.
Now, Job Corps, were you planning to get some specialized training certifications in food service?
I was, and I got into the program faster than anybody else. Could you? It usually takes like 3 weeks for you to get into a program, but I had my resume on my phone and everything. I went to the guy who was running the food service program. He was like, I want you now. They had a culinary competition in Atlantic City coming up, and he wanted me to be a part of it. So I actually qualified, did what I had to do, and we had a nice solid team, and we were going to go. And then this happened, you know, and so
just
that was
again,
a,
just a little
almost
short.
There. Almost there.
Almost there. So Job Corps lasted your Job Corps lasted a month, mm-hmm. and then you're gone. So did you go back home? Or
I
you
did.
Go?
I went back home.
Tired of going back home and doing all that. That must have been hard.
It was. It was. The worst part was just seeing my sisters and seeing them progress in life and get older, and they're not the ones getting in trouble. Like they're looking up to me, but I'm the one who's not doing anything. Yeah. I just keep backtracking, and my life is going in a straight circle.
Yeah.
Over and over again, the same thing over and over again. I do good for 2-3 months, and I'm back at my old ways.
So that was the Job Corps thing was age?
22. Yep.
So you left there. You got back to your old Dave and mm-hmm. back living at the house again. And were we continuing in cocaine now, or are we just back to selling?
I was selling big cocaine.
So now it was cocaine.
Yeah.
And so mm-hmm. that was your deal.
Yeah.
And that continued until
all the way. I was selling that for about 5 years, all the way up until I was 20. About 27. So before I came up here, that's when I stopped. Well, no, it was about 5 months before then.
You were still living at home during all this?
No. I had hooked up with a young lady, and when I got back from Job Corps, me and her got a place because I got in trouble at home again. Mm-hmm. My parents went on vacation. I wasn't supposed to be there. I was supposed to be out finding a place to live and working. I told them I wasn't going because I had to work. So they're like, all right, well, you can't stay here. But I wind up changing the codes on the garage door, unlocking my window, and I got inside the house, broke into the house, really.
Yeah.
So they found out, my neighbor told on me, and they were like, all right, we want you gone by the time, you know, we get back. So I wind up going down to the young lady's house. Her aunt had a spare room in her bedroom. So I wound up going down there, not thinking she was going to move in with me, but she did. And we were talking. She was my girlfriend at the time. So she moved in with me, and we were just going through life. I was still selling. I would go to work, come home, change up, tell her I'll be back, go sit on the streets and sell, go cheat on her, do whatever, go have fun and come back. Go back to work and do it all over again.
Did she have any idea what your world was? Did she know you were selling?
She didn't know I was selling. She knew I was smoking weed, but she didn't know I was selling coke and selling weed.
And didn't know you were cheating
on her. Or cheating on her.
So, but you're really good at living a lie. So,
I'm the best at it.
Kept right on going.
It was great.
So that continued until?
That continued for about 5 months. And then it was actually during a hurricane. And I was outside on the porch smoking weed. And her uncle came outside and he didn't like that. So we got into it and was like, all right, well, we got to go because this is not going to work out with us. So we actually got an apartment, and we stayed there for about 3 months, and she wound up getting carbon monoxide poisoning. So we broke our lease and rolled out. I was still selling, still using, still cheating, but we rolled out. We went to her grandmother's house, and
all the money you're making selling cocaine, you can't even afford rent.
I was affording it. We were making it, but it was just the fact that I was just still burning up what we were trying to save. Yeah. We both made enough money to take. We didn't get evicted or nothing like that. We just rolled out because they didn't treat us right when the carbon monoxide happened. Like they were just like, oh well.
But you went to grandma's house.
Yeah, we went to her grandmother's house.
You're making all that money, you should be able to get your own place.
We should have. Yeah, I tell you that. Or I should have got my own place.
That's the point.
Yeah. Right,
so, right. We wind up here. How did we get to Helping Out Mission?
I was at a job and I wind up getting into a very bad argument with my boss because they were supposed to give me a raise. I was working my butt off. I gave them recipes, changed up their menu. And they basically looked at me and laughed in my face, like, ah, I got you. And that kind of ticked me off a lot. So I wound up, we were closing up shop, and I left the back door open. I wound up going in there at night and taking their money back. I knew where everything was. And I rolled out. They looked in the video cameras. They really couldn't tell it was me, but I kind of, like, I admitted to it. And so I didn't get arrested, but the cops came because the alarm went off. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, we don't want to press charges. He's a good guy. I think he was just going through stuff. And so, but the state picked it up.
Uh-huh.
So the state picked it up, convicted me, and they were sending me to trial. And I was on probation already for this is another major part of my thing, but I had stolen my girlfriend's grandmother's checks, and I wrote four checks. So and her mother was like, you know, we don't want to press charges on them, blah, 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 but the state picked it up. So I had 25 charges for those five checks, and I was facing up to like 25 years in federal prison. But her mother knew the judge. She's a big part in Calvert County's education or whatever. So she knew the judge, and the judge gave me very big leniency and a smack on the wrist and just threw me on probation and gave me a lot of backup time, but she just threw me on probation and sent me to substance abuse classes.
And this is still in Calvert County?
This is in Calvert County. And then a couple months later, this is when I steal from my job.
Yeah.
So I'm on probation for all this.
Yeah.
And they're sending me to trial, and I walk in and I hear somebody talking about drug court, blah, blah, blah. I go to my lawyer. I was like, can I do this? I don't want to face any jail time. I want to be out here. I just had had a son. So I had a fresh newborn, wanted to be there. And so I didn't want to see any jail time. He was like, okay, we'll see what happens. I get admitted to the drug court. They get me in there. And so I'm able to be out work and still be with my son and everything, and I'm free. Drug court's a year, 18-month program, a straight sobriety and or whatever. A month in, a year, I'll go for a piss, and I piss dirty for cocaine, weed, and alcohol. They lock me up. So they lock me up for 2 weeks and tell me that I need a detox and get my thoughts together if I really want to do this, or they're going to ship me up the road right away.
Yeah.
I come out those 2 months. I'm like, all right, I'm ready. Let's do this. Let's do this thing the right way.
Were you ready?
No.
Did you You had not made a change yet.
No, I didn't make a change. Not in my mind.
Gotcha.
I still was selling. Still was using because I only had to piss once a week. So I knew I can get away with it if I just did it once, like the day after I went and did my urinalysis, and I'll be clean by the next day. I had to do it. So I was still out there, but I was just using coke and drinking alcohol. I wasn't smoking weed. I went cold turkey on marijuana. And actually, this was a year and 4 months ago. I did it in January of last year is when I stopped completely. And then 2 months into drug court, I tested positive for alcohol. They locked me up again. And they locked me up this time for a month and a half. They put me in work release, so I'm able to work still. I'm in there for about, like I said, a month and a half, 2 months. I get out, and then I get into an argument one night after work with my baby mother. And, I was raged, and so they're thinking I'm about to go use and this and that, but I'm on house arrest, so I can't just leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm not arguing with her. I'm just very upset, and I go outside, sit in my truck. I'm out there for, 2 hours at night. And her little brother, me and him were cool. He's 21. He's a big guy. He's about my size.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the gym a lot, and he was she calls him up there, and it's I want you to go talk to him, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I have nothing to say to a 21-year-old about anything that's going on. There's nothing he could say or do to make me feel better right now. That's craziness. So I'm arguing with him. He winds up calling the cops on me. And instead of me, I wanted to fight him. But I drove off the property. If that happened, it would be on a house arrest. The alarm goes off with that. So the lady who's doing that, she calls the cops on me. But they're already on the way because they hear it's a domestic disturbance going on. So I drive a mile down the road, and I come back, park in the yard, and then six cop cars pull up. And they're like, okay, well, we're here because there's a domestic disturbance. But I didn't touch anybody. I didn't argue with nobody or nothing.
When you drove back, was there some surrender in that?
It wasn't surrender, but I knew I had messed up.
A moment of clarity.
Yeah.
Was it a moment of clarity like you'd hardly had in a long time?
To a certain degree. But I knew I didn't do anything except for drive off the property. So my thought is, okay, well, they're going to come. I'm going to go down there and I'll be out the next day.
Mm-hmm.
That's my whole thought. Because once they hear the story and they see on the GPS that I haven't gone anywhere, they're going to know that, he's cool. Let's go. Well, that's not how it worked out. So the cops get there. They go talk to him and her. And they're like, no, he didn't hit nobody. Nothing happened. Okay, well, you're good on that, but we have to take you down because you violated your house arrest. So I get down to the jail. They give me they want me to do it. Give them a urine sample. I'm like, that's perfectly fine. That's great, great news. I'll give you this, then I can leave. No, that's not how that happened. So I do that. Then they're like, well, we're going to send it away to LabCorp, and it's going to take about 5 days. So I'm going to sit here for 5 days, miss work, and all this and that because you think I'm going to be dirty. Whatever. So they send it off. This is on a Monday. I have to wait until Thursday to go see the drug court people.
Mm-hmm.
So Thursday morning comes in there and they're like, well, we didn't get the results back yet. And the judge is like, I really think you're dirty. So I'm going to lock you back up and keep you in there until I get the results back. I flip out on them in the courtroom. All you have to do is make a phone call and you can get those results. I know how that works. You're going to lock me up because you think I'm dirty. That's not the case. I've been clean for 3 months now. There's nothing in my system at all. He doesn't believe me. So they lock me back up for the whole weekend. I'm in there all the way until the next following Thursday. And he's like, okay, we got the results back. Oh, I'm sorry that I thought you were dirty. I'm glad you're clean. That's great news. Okay. What about my job? I lost my job now. Everything's gone when it comes to that. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Just whatever. And then they're like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do for you. Because you got the cops called on you, you can't go back to that house. Your mother's just told us that she doesn't want you to come live with her because y'all don't get along. So right now, you're homeless. What we're going to do is send you away to this Helping Up Mission, and it's a year-long program, and we're going to see how that works out for you.
All right, now this is, what jurisdiction are you in?
This is Calvert County.
You're in Calvert County.
Yep.
And this is at the drug court that they tell you this.
Yep.
So I don't know of our connections with Calvert County at all. So
there are none. They don't know nothing about this place. They just know it's a year long program, and they just shipped me up.
Shipped him off to that year long program.
Yeah.
Okay. So you came immediately.
Did they
bring you or
no? They let me out that Friday morning. They threw me on house arrest, and they told me just to get up here. My mom was gonna bring me up here Monday. Again, so I'm telling them, okay, well, I got to go get my check, and I need to go get my hair cut. I'm on house arrest, so they program it in where I'm going to be. And so I go over to the barbershop.
Same old barbershop.
Same old barbershop, and I call up the Coke man, like, I need you, buddy. So he comes up there, and I get what I needed, and I'm just in my room all weekend long getting high right before I come up here.
It had been how long since you got high?
It's been 3 months.
3 months.
Yep.
So you got high just before you got here.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Monday, your mom brought you up.
Monday morning. I was here at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mom know you used?
No, she didn't know I used. Well, yeah. She found out once they were getting the test results back from drug court. But she didn't know I was using over the weekend.
Over the weekend.
Right.
So you got here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember details about you. Mm-hmm. I don't remember at all that you were antagonistic or had any kind of attitudes.
No, I was very humble.
As I saw it, you were compliant.
Yeah.
So the guy you're describing to me is a foreign guy to the guy that I've known for the last how many months?
Seven and a half.
The last 7.5 yep. months. So did you have a moment of clarity before you showed up here? I mean, you used all weekend.
I did. The whole weekend. And that's when I would get high by myself, that's when I would actually sit down and actually think about things.
Mm-hmm.
And only thing that was going through my mind is, David, you have to complete this year or you're not going to see your kids for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at this time, I have two kids. I have two boys, a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old, by the same young lady.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I want to be there. I didn't know my birth dad. I still don't know him. Backtracking, I got in contact with my birth mother about 4 years ago, and that kind of sent me on a binge, a serious binge, mm-hmm. when it came to cocaine and getting high and partying and drinking, and stress. It was a lot of, it was very stressful.
What, and of course we're talking here, this may not be on the tape or may not be in the newsletter, but what did you learn about your birth mother?
That I had two other sisters that she took care of. When I was born, she let me go, and then she had another son, and she kept him. And that she was out there doing her. She was using drugs. Mm-hmm. She was out there partying, drinking, and being wild.
Did it hurt you that you were the one she got rid of?
Oh, it crushed me.
Yeah.
It crushed me.
I can imagine. Now, you always felt some of that, always felt some level of abandonment. No, well, you didn't. When did you find out you were adopted?
I knew I was adopted from for a long time.
Okay,
was,
so they'd made that clear.
Yeah,
to you.
They
so
made that clear.
You we chose you. You're mm-hmm. loved.
Yep.
But we want you to know that you were adopted.
Yep.
So did you always have some feelings of abandonment?
Yeah, I did. And when it came to females, I didn't stick around long. You know, I cheated, did a lot of cheating. Those other personalities I was talking about, as far as I would have a girlfriend who went to the church, and now I have a girlfriend in school. Then I have another girlfriend who I worked with or whatever. So yeah.
You were cheated, mistreated, and so
that's the way I felt the world.
Pass it around. So you got here humbled,
mm-hmm.
committed to do this thing.
Yep.
Where did your spiritual upbringing kick back in?
During blackout. I got into my Bible. I got into doing devotions and just morning devotion. My first time hearing Pastor Dunn, that touched me.
Yeah.
Pastor, everybody, that whole time. I think I missed yours that Monday because I was still doing my intake.
Uh-huh. But that first week.
That first week, yeah. You know, Rasheed, Pete, everybody.
Did you feel like you were coming home?
I did.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
arms back to what you wide doing. Open.
Yeah, I got that.
Because like I said, I know the Bible.
Yeah.
Yes. I know God. I know I have a very strong spiritual connection, but it was just gone for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
It was gone. I just ignored it.
Because that is the guy that I got to know in class. Mm-hmm. Quiet, but settled in who he is and what he believes. And it's incredible how far off you got and all that happened. And yet with a moment of clarity, it came back quick.
Yeah.
Not part of our tape, but Martin Leitner's story was similar as his spirituality was real. But boy, he really got off. So I know that. So, did you ever get any certifications in your food service stuff?
Just no certifications.
Skills, hard work skills.
Yeah. Besides ServSafe, that was it.
You did get ServSafe.
Yeah, I'm still ServSafe,
which is important.
Yeah.
So, what's next for you, David?
I don't know. I say that because I kind of do not want to go back to Calvert County to be – I don't know how me and my kid's mother's relationship is going to work out
right.
Completely. She's there for me completely and wants me to come back, but I'm not there with her mentally and physically and all that type of lovey-dovey stuff. I'm not there with her anymore. So I just think it'll be just a miserable time for me.
So right now you're just sitting still here.
Yeah.
Now – was we alluded to earlier, one of the important things to you, one of the big things for you here has been playing the drums in our band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how long has it been before you started playing for us? How long had it been since you'd played in the church?
5 years.
So five or six years.
Yeah.
And what did it feel like to get back behind the drums and to play music in worship to God? What did that feel like when you sat back down?
After I got the jitters out, it felt great. It was something we learned. Endorphins. What is it?
Yeah, endorphins.
My endorphins were actually kicking in, and I was just having fun with it, like opening up. We would go in there sometimes, me and some of the guitar players, and just have a good, nice little jam session, and that was like. Great. That was better than smoking weed or taking a lot of coke.
Isn't that interesting?
It was great.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, you know, God makes us like we are, and he gives us gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave you a gift to play music, to play the drums. And I love watching you up there when you're playing.
Thank you.
And for you to use your gift honors God, especially using an appropriate setting.
Right.
Honors God, and I'm sure it brings great joy to your heart.
It does.
That's an important part of your recovery here, isn't it?
It really is.
We really try to have things that work for different guys.
Yep.
Now, how tall are you?
6'3".
6'3". Did you play basketball?
Not for sports. I mean, not for school or anything. I played, though, and I can play. I just didn't do it.
Have you played with Rasheed and the guys here?
Yep, I sure have.
So that's a nice thing for you as well.
I love it, too. that's something else
that's
I enjoy.
That's another important part.
Competition is great.
Of being here. Mm-hmm. So career-wise, what are we thinking? What's where are we going, do you think?
Well, right now I'm working at McCormick & Smith, cooking there. They really like me and enjoy me.
No surprise.
Right. But I just don't know if that will work for me long term because of the pay rate and stuff. But if I go back to Calvert County, I have a position available where a restaurant just opened up, and my kid's mother, her mother know, or my, should I say my kid's grandmother knows the people who own that restaurant. They're looking for a head chef. But the only way I can get that is if I go back down to Calvert, right. And I'm not, right. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm ready to do that.
And God will show you.
I know.
He'll let you know at the right.
And I pray right and time. Ask him that every night.
Yeah.
You know, just keep me.
Now
show me the way to go.
You're one of those guys who has skills and talent and discipline and focus to be able to do a good job. Do you feel the need? Are you concerned about getting some certifications? Or are you really comfortable with your skill set that you're going to go without that stuff?
I'm kind of comfortable with that, with my skill set. But then something that was very eye-opening was the first thing I did when I could was when I went and tried to get a job was apply to the Marriott. So I went there and I had to do a cooking test and all this, a two-hour test. And I got blown out the waters by some of these college kids.
Like, interesting.
So I see where I need to step up my game. But that was after going straight 6 months without cooking anything.
Right.
So, and these guys, they're fresh out of college or in college for culinary arts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I see what I need to do when it comes to that. But still, even like where I'm at now, like they love me. They want me to do management and training and all this and that. But I just don't think they're going to pay me enough to make it to what I need to do.
Do you have child support issues?
I do. I have big child support.
So you've got to. One of the nice things, as young as you are, it'd be nice if you could go ahead and get whatever certification you need to get now.
Yeah.
And then have it done for the rest of your life and career. But you've got responsibilities, and you're willing. You understand that you're not shirking them, and that's to be commended too.
Yep.
So not quite sure what the next step is.
Not sure.
Like one thing we know, we're going to finish this program.
Definitely.
That's really important.
Definitely.
And then you'll see what kind of leaning you get as to whether to go back home and all that's involved in that, or maybe try to get some training, stay up here and get some training.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe if they want you to go into management things, maybe that'll be part of the deal is maybe you don't get the money you want, but they pay for schooling.
That would be nice too. That,
you know, maybe that's something you put on the table. So what are some of the good things about being here at Helping at Mission for you?
Oh, man, there's so many of them. The people here are great. The staff, they're extraordinary.
How about the other clients?
The clients, it's the type of place where you don't want to get close to somebody too fast because they could be here one day, then be gone the next.
Uh-huh.
But you do need to have a group of people where you can keep them accountable for you and you can be accountable for them.
Yeah.
And I've came to grow with a lot of people. I know a lot of people now. A lot of people know me, but it's all for the good reasons because I play the drums, I've worked in the kitchen, and I'm not one that's getting in trouble or anything. Like I haven't had one write up, I haven't had anything.
So what else has been meaningful for you here?
The band, going back to that's given me a lot of – that's built my humility more than I could ever imagine. Working with Miss Kim is something, and it's helped me a lot. I really do appreciate her, appreciate Kirk and everybody who does that.
Does the team concept and working as one, does that – like you did with ROTC and stuff, is that – part of it. You don't seem to be back there. Of course, you're hidden behind everybody, but you don't seem to be back there trying to stand out.
No.
You seem to be comfortable just doing your part.
That's all. That's what it's about. Yeah. I mean, we're not professionals, and we're just doing praises. That's all we're doing.
And anything else anything about your spiritual walk that you want to talk about?
My spiritual walk has gotten better. I'm getting back to reading my Bible, trying to do the Proverbs daily.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at right now. I work in the evenings. I try to sleep a little bit during the mornings, and then band practice, choir practice, yeah. And then especially getting ready for the banquet. Got a lot of practices coming up.
Yes. And you are unusual because, as you probably know, every time a guy gets a job and goes to work, the band's gone.
You're the second person that told me that, so what? Yes. It must be true.
And of course, your work schedule does allow you
to be there.
But most guys, it's just too much of a hassle. Right. And we respect that. Mm-hmm. But it's important to you.
Yeah,
it's part of who you are. It's in your DNA, and mm-hmm. you want to do that.
I'm at least trying to make it to the banquet, and then after that, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. But to help us through that, it's sort of a selfless thing to help us do, and that's really, you're to be commended for that.
Thank you.
And, Sharla, we encourage the guys to read the chapter of Proverbs that matches the date. And so David learned that early on, and he tries to make that one of his spiritual disciplines, and that's a good thing. Well, what would you say to a guy who needs help, struggling with drug and alcohol addiction and needs help?
Help on a mission is the place to be. It can save your life. It saves lives, and it's saving lives. Saved mine from not necessarily dying from drugs, but from going to jail, going to prison for about 12 years.
Yeah.
And who knows what would happen up there.
Yeah.
You know? So if you need help, helping our mission is the place to be.
Well, thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Charlotte, is there anything else you'd like to ask or point out or raise issues with?
Did any of your other siblings ever have any, like, did they ever try any of the drugs?
My sisters used to smoke weed and they drink, but I don't think they're smoking anymore. But that was it. Yeah, that's
and,
all.
And there are people that can have a drink
mm-hmm.
and be fine and not go crazy with it. And do you know anything about your birth siblings?
My one sister, my oldest sister, she lives in New York and she's an entertainer.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure she drinks. I know she doesn't smoke or do any other type mm-hmm. of drug. My other sister, she lives in Laurel. She drinks, but she doesn't smoke or do any mm-hmm. other type of drugs. And my youngest brother, he doesn't even drink. He's 20, though, so he just graduated high school, and he's not into that.
So you were the black sheep.
I was the black sheep.
Took after mama.
Mm-hmm.
And is mama still struggling?
She's struggling with drinking. Mm-hmm. I don't know about anything else.
And you don't really know anything about your dad?
No. I'm actually able to get in contact with him. My birth mother, she found him. It took her about 5 months to find him. And she's mentioned him to me, and he's waiting on me to call him. But I'm not comfortable enough and know what is going to be the outcome of it.
Yeah, that's smart. So until you're comfortable and ready, you're not going to make the call.
Right.
I get that. Was he the father of any of your siblings?
No, just me. I think we all have different fathers, actually.
Okay. Well, quite a story. Very happy for you. Very proud of what you're doing here.
Thank you.
The guy that he was describing is not the guy that we have in this building for the last 7.5 months.
But now they'll know.
but that says what chemicals do to us. They just get us out of character. And
there's something as small as weed.
Yeah.
It ruined my life, really.
Yeah.
It ruined it from what I could have been doing right now.
Yeah.
But it could have helped me also.
Yep. We'll trust the process.
I'm trusting. I'm sticking around.
Yeah. Well, very happy for you. Very proud of what you're doing.
Thank you.
And take your time.
Definitely.
You don't have to rush it. And and you'll get a sense from God the next step at the right time, and then just have to, by faith, walk through it.
Yeah.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.